Okay, so we've been, over the last month, we've been developing an appreciation and understanding of Masorah and the tradition and the nuances of tradition. So I want to kind of start shifting our perspective as we turn toward the second half of the year. This is for Stephanie.
People back there?
Yeah. Okay. Toward our Masorah in specific, meaning we look around in the community and we notice that there are different approaches to different things. There are different ways of looking at, especially when it comes to hashkafic issues, not just halachic issues, different practices, different ways of looking at Torah life, as we know. Name any issue, whether it's serving in the Israeli army or studying secular studies or, you know, how a person dresses, there are a lot of different approaches. So what I want to kind of look at today is shifting from general Masorah, you know, the tradition and development tradition, multiple perspectives, to how did we get to our perspective? And that's what I want to focus on for the rest, kind of toward the rest of the year, is looking at what makes our Masorah special, what should we be proud of, how do we appreciate it and understand it. So to do that, I want to give a model and share with you one model that answers the core question. You know, part of our tradition, one of our great sages, our beacons of tradition, is Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Now, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik had a first cousin who was also one of the titans of Torah of the 20th century, and his name was Rav Velvel, Rabbi Yitzchak Zev Halevi Soloveitchik. And in certain respect, the Briska Rav and the Rav were very similar. In certain schools, you know, if you say the Rav, it means Rav Yitzchak Zev, the Briska Rav, Rav Velvel. And in other schools, if you say the Rav, it means Rav Joseph B. Soloveitchik. They were born to two fathers. The Rav Yitzchak Zev was the uncle of Rav Soloveitchik. So Rav Soloveitchik's father was Rav Moshe. And they were born to the same father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. And what's interesting is that you have one man, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was a transformational figure. We're not going to talk about him right now. But he had two sons. One survived the war, made his way to Yerushalayim, and has a particular approach. And his students have a particular approach. And his other son, before the war, comes to America, settles in a particular yeshiva in New York. His son, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, the nephew of the Briska Rav, of Rav Velvel, has his own students and a very different outlook. So how is it that Reb Chaim had two sons and two grandsons and great-grandchildren that have such different paths? And we see this a lot through the development of Masorah. And I want to focus on one Talmudic or Mishnaic example of this. And through this we can appreciate and see that this is an old model and that the idea of Elu ve'elu, that we talked about once earlier about machlokas and differences of opinion, can exist even in one close family or one close school of Talmidei Chachamim. So we're going to focus more today on stories and see how these stories can fill out a picture that's the beginning of a journey to a whole world of limud that we're not going to pursue in general, but it helps us transition to what we're going to focus on practically in understanding our Masorah. So two works that were helpful for me is this book called Chachamim, which is translated into English now called The Sages by Benny Lau, and this book called The Encyclopedia of Talmudic Disputes and Perspectives by Nachman Cohn of Riverdale. Both interesting, and we'll get back to them kind of a little bit. This is part of a three-part series that Rabbi Lau did on, I think it was in his shul, that he did on the development of the Chachamim from a historical standpoint, as well as from a halachic and hashkafic personality standpoint. And this is a very interesting fellow, Rabbi Nachman Cohn, who in a couple of books, a couple of different books, this one is called Esther's Plea, actually, this particular one, he collects the machloks in shas of different sages and develops patterns based on how you see their views line up, patterns of what their different perspectives are, which is very interesting. So today I want to focus on two sages. Let's start on page one with a great story. I suspect that many of you have heard this story. Maisa, it's a story. Who's the story with? V'Rabbi Eliezer, V'Rabbi Yoshua, V'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, V'Rabbi Akiva, V'Rabbi Tarfon, Shahoyim Mesubim b'Bnei Brak. It's the story. Where's the story from? There you go. It's from the Haggadah Shel Pesach. We know the story. But today, we're looking at this story from a different vantage point than maybe we've thought about it from which we've thought about it before. Who's at the table? Who's at the table in this story? So in the middle of the table, in the middle of the five, is the host, and that is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva lived in Bnei Brak. That's where they were. Shahu Mesubim b'Bnei Brak. This is a passage from the Haggadah, of course, from the beginning of Magid, and this particular page comes from Rav Rimon's Haggadah, so it gives you a little bit of background on the bottom. Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, was sitting in the middle for a reason that we're not going to talk about today. And who are the two first figures to be mentioned? Right? Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. And those are the people we're going to talk about today. So their last names, Rabbi Eliezer's names, his name was Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Hyrcanus was a very prominent, important, aristocratic family. And Rabbi Yoshua was Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananiah. He came from the family of Leviim. And these were two great sages. They lived in different places. Rabbi Eliezer lived in Lod, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah lived in Pekin. But none of these people are gathering in Yerushalayim. Why are they not gathering in Yerushalayim?
Romans won't let them. I mean, this is after the destruction of the temple.
That's right, because we're talking now, this story is taking place after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, after the destruction of the temple. So they're meeting in Bnei Brak. As we know, one of the things that happened with the implosion of the Jewish community with the Roman pressure was that they were able to escape, thanks to, we know, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they were able to, which we'll talk about a little bit later, they were able to escape out of Yerushalayim, Yavne v'Chachamel. They settled in Yavne, and then at a certain point they started to migrate even further north to Tzipori, like later on in the Mishnah. So they're migrating first north, and then ultimately they're going to go to Bavel at the end of the Mishnaic period. So here we have these two rabbis are seated at the same table at the same time. They were interlocutors. They were chaverim, they were chavrusas. They're living at the same time, which means they're living at this period just at the end, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And they had the same teacher, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, he's known as the Great. Turn the page, Pirkei Avos. Let's go back to the chain of Masorah. Chapter 2, Mishnah 9. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Kibel, Mehil of Shammai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived when? Just at the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And he received from his teachers, from Hillel and Shammai, Chamisha Talmidim Hayulo, the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai himself had five students. Ve'eluhein, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, number one, same man from the story at the Haggadah. And number two, Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananiah, the second man from the story in the Haggadah. And he has others, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, Rabbi Shimon ben Nisanel, and Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. This is a little bit tricky, which we're not going to focus on, but sometimes it's easy to get confused because there were people, their names were Eliezer and Elazar. Those are not the same person. And there were also two different Elazars. There's Reb Elazar ben Arach, and then there's Reb Elazar Hamoda'i. And then later in the Amoraic period, there was Reb Elazar ben Pedas. So it's easy to get confused. We're going to be talking about Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. And in Mishnah Yud Aleph, Hu Haya Moneh Shivchan. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus bore sud she'eno ma'abe tipa. We're going to come back to that. He was like a plaster cistern that didn't lose a drop. And Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananiah, Ashrei Yoladato. Praiseworthy is the person who gave birth to him. That's an interesting phrase. Ashrei Yoladato. What does that mean? Ashrei Yoladato. What do you think that means? And why does it have to do with birth? So let's come back to that. But keep that on the back burner. So we have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai now is the teacher. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua are the students. And they weren't just any students. Let's look at the Gemara on page 3. Look at how close these two students were to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Because the Gemara tells us in Gittin Adaf Nun Vav, this is the Gemara that is permitted to study on Tisha B'Av because it's about the Churban, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara describes that there were warmongers in the city of Yerushalayim. They were called Biryoni. And they were out of control radicals, Jewish radicals. And even though there was ample food and fuel to withstand a siege for many years, the Gemara says that the warmongers were fomenting revolt. So what did they do? They destroyed the storehouses. And now there was starvation. You can see how bad things were internally in the Jewish community at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. Just how bad it was. So interestingly, the Gemara tells you, these warmongers, these radicals, they were known as the Biryoni. The Gemara says, look on the underline here, on line number 1, Abba Sikra, Reish Biryoni de Yerushalayim, Abba Sikra, who was the head of the Biryonim in Yerushalayim, Bar Achte de Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Hava. He was the son of the sister of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He was the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the head of the Rabbanim, who was not in favor of an armed revolt against the Romans, which of course is going to prove to be disastrous. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, this is a bad idea. So the Gemara describes how he met secretly with his nephew. Sholach le tobit sinu legaboy, come quietly to me. Omar le ad emas avdisu hachi v'katlisu le la'alma b'kafna. Said Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, how long are you doing this? You're going to kill the people in a famine because the Biryonim had destroyed the storehouses. Number 4. Interesting. Look at this line. Omar le, I'm on page 3, line 4. My Yavid, what can I do? Said Abba Sikra. Di amina luhu midi katluli. Abba Sikra says, he says, I agree with you. I don't agree with this strategy. I think it's a bad idea. But if I tell something to the warmongers, what are they going to do to me? They're going to kill me. So isn't that, by the way, an interesting statement about the politics of the time?
Yeah.
You know, this man who was, quote unquote, the leader of the brigade, he couldn't control them. That's what he's telling Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He says, I don't know what to tell you. I can't stop them. And if I try, they're going to kill me. Says Abba Sikra to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Amazing. So they hatch a plan. Here's the plan. So he says, Omar Li, Chazili Takanta Lididi De Epoch Efshe Dehave Hatzala Porter. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, let me out of here of the siege, and I can figure something out. A little bit of a Hatzala. Omar Li, so Abba Sikra comes up with a plan. Nikot Nafshach, I'm in line 5. Bekitsiri Velezi Kule Alma Velashai Lubach. Nikot Nafshach Bekitsiri, take your soul in the straits. Pretend that you are sick. Feign illness, grave illness. Everybody should come and visit you. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the Gadol Hador. So somebody should put out a text, one of these mass WhatsApp texts, that the Gadol Hador is sick. And everybody should come and should daven for him, should come visit him. V'laishubach, v'laishailubach, and now line 6, v'ayasi midi saria, and bring something that's spoiled and rancid, v'agni gabach, and hide it next to you, put it next to you, and people will say, it should be rotting, that people will say, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has died. Okay. V'la'ailubach talmidach, v'lo la'ailubach ina shachrini. Only your students should come in, and nobody else. Do lo l'rag shembach dekulal at, line 7. Because when they pick you up, they're going to feel that you are light. Because a person, while they are alive, they have their neshama, they have their spirit, they are lighter than a corpse, Rahman Litzlan, who when you lift a corpse, I've never had such an experience, as a Kohen, that's not my line of work, but for people who work in the Chevra Kadisha or pallbearers, they could tell you that a person who passed away is heavier than the person who's living. So Abba Sikra said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you have to have people who won't spill the beans. You have to find the most trusted people. This is a matter of life and death now. So who's going to do this job? Who are going to be the people to carry Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and carry the fate of the future of the Jewish people in their hands with this ruse to get through on the one side Biryonim and on the other side to get to the Romans? What does the Gemara say in the first wide line? Under the underline. Rebbe Lezer nichnas bo Rebbe Lezer mitzad echad v'Rebbe Yoshua mitzad acher. These were the two men. And as the rest of the story goes, he escapes, he runs to Vespasian, he gets permission to go to Yavne, set up the Yavne v'chachamim, the shulchanos of Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Tzadok with the doctor. This is a crucial moment. And I don't think I ever paid attention until I was thinking about this whole idea that these are the two students. So must be they were his, either they happened to be local or they were the most trusted disciples. Because this is the keep secret. And when he gets to the gate, the Gemara then describes, you know what they were going to try to do?
Swords.
That's right, they were going to take a sword and say, let's just be sure that what you're saying is true. And they said, no, you can't do that to the Gadol HaDor, you're not going to stick him with a knife. And they got him out. So Rebbe Lezer and Rebbe Yeshua, these are the two chief disciples of one man, of Rebbe Yochanan ben Zakkai. And on the other end, yeah?
So who was the man that actually came up with the scheme?
So, what did it say? It was Abba Sikra who came up with the scheme, and it must have been Rebbe Yochanan ben Zakkai who suggested these Talmidim. So it's not just, here's another interesting side on the other end of the narrative, on the other end of the story, on the other end of the trajectory of the Masorah. These two great rabbis, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, they came from one Rebbe, and they also had the same student. Who was the one student between Rabbi Lezer HaGadol and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya? That's right, it was Rabbi Akiva. And where do we find this? We find this actually in a very interesting story. We know there are several stories about Rabbi Akiva and his journey as a Baal Tshuva. This is one interesting story. It appears in the Yerushalmi. Look on page 4. In the bottom of the Yerushalmi, Omer Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, Kach haisa tchilas tashmishi lefnei chachamim. This was the beginning of my Tashmish, my shimush talmidei chachamim, my tutelage, my learning. Because you know there's a big difference between learning from a book and what's called shimush talmidei chachamim. Gadol shimusha yosem b'limuda. Having real life experience of seeing a role model, what it means to paskin a shaylan, analyze the question. So Rabbi Akiva says this is what happened. Pam achas hayisi mahalech baderech. One time I was walking on the road. Rabbi Akiva had a lot of things happen to him. He always said, I saw this and I had this. He was a very observant person. Umatsasi meis mitzvah. And I found, meis mitzvah. And in those days, they didn't have the same kind of organized chevra that we've had for centuries. Chevra gemilas chasadim, chevra kadisha, where they take care of free burial society. Unfortunately, but this means it's maisa shara kachaya. He literally found a deceased person on the side of the road. That's it. So what are you going to do?
Bury it right there.
So, okay. Yeah. So you say bury it right there.
Yes.
But at this time, Rabbi Akiva, not so knowledgeable. He knows at least there's a very important mitzvah of Kavod Abrias, of Meis Mitzvah. He's got to take care of it. So the Gemara says, so Dr. Shane says bury it right there. But the Gemara says, Nitfalti bo ka'arbas mil ad shevesu v'lmokam akvoros v'kivartiv. I carried him around 4 mil, I carried him quite a distance, so I brought him to a cemetery and I buried him there. Ukshabasi Eitzel Rabbi Eliezer ve'Eitzel Rabbi Yeshua Amarti Lehem Esadavar. So when I came to my Rabbeim, who were the Rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Amarti Lehem Esadavar. I told them this thing. Amruli, they said to me, Al kol psia upsia, on every step, Shayisa posea, Malin Alecha, turn the page, Ki'ilu Shafachta Damim. It's as if you murdered the guy, because you embarrassed him. You were You were shaming him. You didn't give him the proper dignity of burying him right then and there, which is the halacha. Now, I'm not talking about b'sman hazeh, what the rules are. Don't, right? If you find Rahman al-Islam something like this, the first thing to do is call the police. Don't take this Yerushalmi into your own hands for the moment. So, said Rabbi Akiva, Amarti, I said to myself, said Rabbi Akiva, in Bishash and Iskavanti Lizchus, when I had the right thing in mind, I tried to do the right thing, Nishayavti, I was obligated, I did the wrong thing, Bishash alone Iskavanti Lizchus, at the time where I did not have in mind to do the right thing, Alachas Kama Vakama. Of course I'm going to make mistakes if I don't pay close attention to the teachings of my teachers, my rabbeim. And therefore, Ba'usa Shah, from that moment, lo zazti, I never moved milashamish chachamim. And that's why he says, Hu haya omer, Rabbi Kiva used to say, to lo lashimish chakima katla. If you don't serve tamina chachamim, you're going to die. Because you're not going to know the right path to take. You're going to think you're doing the right thing, but it's going to turn out that it's not the right thing. So they had the same Rebbe, and they had the same Talmud. But what's interesting is that they were so different. That their approach to life and their approach to learning, despite having the same Rebbe, was very different. And this is going to have halachic and hashkafic ramifications. So how do we see that they were different? So we already saw that their brachos, their praises from the Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, were divergent. So here's an interesting comment. Take a look, the Gemara in Sukkah. Let's start here. A story. I told you today's going to be a lot of stories. Maisa, another Maisa. Maisa Rebbe Eliezer. A story of Rebbe Eliezer, Sheshavas Begolil. He went to the Galil. He spent Shabbos in the Galil. Maybe he went to Kibbutz Lavi for a vacation, something. You know, he got away. He usually lived in Lod. There was so much traffic in Lod. He had to get to Galil. He could relax a little bit. And what happened? The Galil HaElyon in the Upper Galilee. V'sha'alu shloshim halachos b'hilchos sukkah. They asked him 30 halachos in Hilchos sukkah. Shtemesrei amar lehem shamati. 12 of them, he said, I heard. And shmona asar, 18 of them, amar lehem lo shamati. And 18 of them, he said, I didn't hear what the halacha is. And then Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says it was the opposite. 18 he heard, 12 he didn't hear. Amrulo, three lines later, in the middle of the line. Kol dvarecha einen ela mipi hashmua? Wait a second, Rabbi Lezer. I understand, you didn't hear 12 or 18, whatever the other number was. But everything is just what you heard? Why don't you touch it up? Why don't you learn it? Why don't you figure it out? You know, Rebbe Eliezer was, before he died, the Gemara describes how he told the students his two arms were like two Sifrei Torah. I saw, quoting a Medrash, that Rebbe Yeshua, after the death of Rebbe Eliezer, saw the seat, the chair that he used to sit on, and he went over and he kissed it. He was a giant. So they said to him, okay, you didn't hear it from your Rabbeim. So what do you think the halacha is? You didn't hear it. So he said to him, you're putting me in a bad spot. You're making me very uncomfortable. Why are you making me uncomfortable? Amalahem, his kaktuni lomar davar shalo shamati mipi rabbi. You are making me uncomfortable because you're making me say something that I didn't hear from my rabbeim. And now he's going to go on to tell them all the things, his personal hanhagos, all the things that he never did, that he was careful about for himself. He says, nobody ever got to the Beis Medrash before me, and I never slept in the Beis Medrash, I never took a nap in the Beis Medrash, and I never spoke sichas chulin, he never spoke just mundane conversation. And then, the underline, v'lo amarti davar shelo shamati mipi Rebbe me'olam. Rebbe Lezer HaGadol says, I never taught anything that I didn't hear from my Rabbeim. Interesting. He is the boar Sid. What did his Rebbe say about him? He is the cistern that doesn't lose a drop. And he says, that's all it is. That's my focus. My focus is, whatever I learned, I'm going to pass it on.
Transmission.
And the purity of that transmission is going to transcend the value of, you know, you can make arguments and you can compare. You can, he says, that doesn't move me. That's not of interest to me. So now we go to page 7 to the story of the Tanur Shel Achnoi. Some of us spoke about this. We're here when we spoke about this story, but we focused on it from a different vantage point. Top line, Tanur Shel Achnoi, there was this oven that was, it was made like a snake, meaning it was made out of components, different pieces. So they had this machlokes between four lines in, Reb Lezer and the other Chachamim. And we have this famous debate in which, go to line 5, Amar Lahem, Im Halacha Kamosi, said Reb Lezer ben Hurkanes, if the Halacha follows me, Chorav Ze Yochiach, this carob should prove it, and the carob tree was uprooted from the ground. 100 amas. Then the Gemara says, he says, if the halachas with me, the amas hamayim, the water stream, should prove it. And it did. It backed up the other way. And finally, he said to the walls of the Beis Medrash, Kosli Beis Medrash, go down a few lines. You see on the right side, the big letters in Tosef says, Kachayach, go to the left. Chazav Avalem, Im Alocha Kmosi, Kosli Beis Medrash Yochichu, the Kosli Beis Medrash Yochichu, he too Kosli Beis Medrash Lipol. They started to fall in. Goar Bohem! He yelled at them. Who yelled at the walls? Who stopped the walls from falling? Goar Bohem? Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua stands up. And he says, stop. He told the walls, stop caving in. The Gemara describes, here you have Rabbi Lezer on one side, and Rabbi Yeshua on the other side. So the walls remained in this sort of precarious middle state, where on the one hand, they didn't fall and collapse out of the honor of Rabbi Yeshua, but they didn't straighten up out of the honor of Rabbi Lezer. So notice, it's Rabbi Yeshua who's standing up to Rabbi Lezer. And finally, in this famous exchange, Rabbi Lezer says, Im halacha kamosi min hashamayim yochichu. The heavens should tell me who the halacha is, and I'm telling you they're going to say it's like me, and a baskol comes out, and it says, halacha is like Rabbi Lezer. Who stands up? Amar Rabbi Yeshua. Al Raglov, and again, he stands on his feet, so this means now he's really taking a stand, literally, and he says, V'omar lo bashamayim hi. He says, lo bashamayim. So this is a watershed moment, because unfortunately, the Gemara describes in the continuation that Rabbi Eliezer would not back down, because he insisted that this was correct, and therefore, the Chacham and the other sages, they excommunicated him. The greatest rabbi was now excommunicated, and his student, Rabbi Akiva, who the Gemara describes later, went to inform him, and the Gemara has another story, has several stories about their interactions on the deathbed of Rabbi Lezer, when Rabbi Akiva went to say goodbye to his own Rebbe, who he couldn't stand within 4 amos of him because he was in Cherem. Rabbi Lezer would not back down, but Rabbi Yeshua and the other Chachamim did not agree. And notice that it's Rabbi Yeshua who's at the front of that argument. He's the one who's taking the stand. Rabbi Yeshua says, and this is the phrase that appears elsewhere in Shas, Ein mashgichim babaskol. You're not mashgiach, you don't pay attention to what it says in a baskol. You don't. Well, where did this come from Rabbi Lezer? Where did this approach come from? And how did Rabbi Yeshua differ? Well, there is an interesting expression about Rabbi Lezer that appears in the Gemara on page 8.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I just had such a hard time with the whole concept of the Chayram, because this was Machloket.
Right.
What is Machloket? It is discussion. It is, if you don't agree, so you take your marbles and you leave. I mean,
to me, I understand that these were the great sages. These were, you can agree to disagree. And instead, no, we have to say, sorry, you can't play anymore. You're out of the game. Oh,
so it's a great question. Because, you know, to support you, the whole Talmud, the whole Mishnah, everything is full of machlokas. Right? So what's going on in the story? So I think there's the macro and the micro. So the macro is, and this is an interesting, it goes back to the Maaseh Rebbe Gamliel, there were different, as we see here, there were different personalities who viewed the transition and development of Torah in different ways. Because you can view Torah, and we see this historically, as a more centralized process versus a more diffused process. So at different times, let's say Rabbi Gamliel, who we're not talking about today, but Rabbi Gamliel at this time, he was not at the Seder. He also, for a while, had a very particular approach about leadership, and the Gemara in Brachos describes how he was very heavy-handed because he was very insistent on centralizing things. Well, perhaps because Rabbi Gamliel is concerned about the future of Judaism in the post-Beis HaMikdash era, so he wants it to be very centralized. So this brings us to the micro, which is, we have to discuss, the Gemara wants to know what to do with food that was put in this tanur, this oven. It was a practical question. There was food, there were taharos, they were careful about tumah and tahara, there was food that was in this oven, and the rabbis are sitting in a circle. And they said, essentially, we have to come to one resolution. We have one case, we have one court, we have to make one decision. And just like in the Beis Din HaGadol, when they had the court of 71 judges, the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, they would sit there all day until they came up with one decision. So the rabbi said to him, look, at the end of the day, you may be a giant, but we have to decide. We have to make one decision. This is a practical question. This is not to say that in every case, nobody's entitled to their opinion. Because like the Gemara describes, when it comes to, let's say, Gemara in Chulin, chicken and milk. Can you eat chicken and milk together? So there were some sages who darshan the psukim that you can, and in their towns they eat. Could you imagine going to somebody's Shabbos table, and they served for a first course, they served buttermilk chicken nuggets. And you said, oh, delicious power of buttermilk. I never had such delicious power of buttermilk. And they said, no, it's not power, it's milchig. And b'mekom moshel, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, they did that. They did that. But when it comes to an Amidah L'minyan, when we have to make one decision, the Chacham said, with all due respect to your blesser, you have to go along with the majority. And if you're not prepared to go along with the majority, as great as you are, you can't be at the table with everybody.
I mean, the only way to get rid of him is Chayra?
Well, that was the formal designation that meant, you know, you have to be outside of the group. That's what it meant. Which was not uncommon. Again, today for us, cherem has, I think, a little bit of a different connotation. In those days, it was actually somewhat common. That was the social instrument that they had for identifying and ostracizing someone.
And it was usually short term, right?
So the Gemara has different terms. The Gemara in Moed Katan actually has, there are regulations. The Rambam has specific regulations about cherem, and there are different strata. There's something called shamta, and cherem, and nidui. So depending on how severe it is that the person's, you know, being ostracized. But in this case, these were colleagues. And these are people who looked up to Rabbi Elazar. Remember, Rabbi Yeshua had such reverence for him. But it was a procedural matter. They said, you might be great, but we have to follow the process here. The process says that lo bashamayim, Rabbi Yeshua said. That's the process that we're going with.
Well, at the time of the Sanhedrin, if the majority said this, and one person disagreed, and he wouldn't back down. Wasn't it the Chayv Misa or something?
Well, like that? That's a case. That's called Zaken Mamre. It's a Zaken little bit Mamre, different. Zaken Mamre is a case where a person goes home and then paskins for other people. Mm-hmm. You could be convinced, and maybe we'll just end with this one note, then we'll get back to the story here. If you're a rabbi who is Higiyah Lahura, who is on the Sanhedrin, and you're convinced of your position, you're entitled to follow your position against the majority. You don't listen to the Sanhedrin because you can tell them, I know better, but I can't paskin that for somebody else. Because the community has to follow the uniform psak of the Sanhedrin. It can't be that everybody's going to go home and tell everybody, you know, this is what I do, this is what I do. When we get together, if there's one Amidah L'minyan, you have to follow the unified psak. So Rebbe Lezer is going to continue to teach, but he's going to have this formal designation. So now, here's another story, another machlokas. This is a Gemara Nidan Zayin Amud Beis, where the Gemara has a machlokas in the Mishnah about the status of a woman in a particular circumstance. It's not for us today. Tanya Amalo Rebbe Lezer le Rebbe Yeshua. So here we have a conversation between Rebbe Lezer and Rebbe Yeshua arguing about a particular halakhic point. Ata lo shamata. Rebbe Lezer says to Rebbe Yeshua, you didn't hear the halacha in this case. Remember, who's talking? Who's the first person here? Who's speaking? What did Rebbe Lezer say? He says, I am going to tell you everything that I learned from my teachers. So Rabbi Eliezer says to him, you didn't hear this halacha. I heard it. That's what I'm all about. Atalo shamata elachas ani shamati harba. You didn't hear a lot of halachos from your teachers. I was there with you in the early years with Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, and I heard. Ein omim lamisha lo roa sachodesh yavo v'yoed el lamisha ro'o kol yomav shol lamisha ro'o. Don't tell me, Rabbi Eliezer, what the halacha is. Don't ask a guy who's never seen the new moon to come and testify. Ask somebody who's seen it all the time. I've heard. Remember, this is Rebbe Lezer again. I heard. But Rebbe Yeshua doesn't follow. Rebbe Yeshua says, I have an argument. I have a different perspective. I have a creative analysis. Another way of looking at it. I have a different approach. You're right, I didn't hear it. But I analyzed it. So, kol yamav shel Rebbe Lezer, hayu osin k'Rebbe Yeshua. During Rebbe Lezer's lifetime, they paskin like Rebbe Yeshua. But afterwards, Rebbe Yeshua changed the psak to Rebbe Lezer's psak. After the death of Rebbe Lezer. The Gemara says, why? Because Rebbe Yeshua was concerned that if they would follow Rebbe Lezer during his lifetime, he was such a giant that in all the other cases, they would just follow in lockstep. They would just follow everything that Rebbe Lezer said. So Rebbe Yeshua had to hold the line on this psak against Rebbe Lezer. Well, why didn't they paskin like Rebbe Lezer in the first place? Why were the rabbis not willing to paskin like Rebbe Lezer? So the Gemara says, why not? Mishum in the underline, Rebbe Lezer, shamuti hu. Rebbe Lezer was shamuti. What does it mean that he was shamuti? Why wouldn't they paskin like him? Because he was a shamuti. So Rashi says, you know why he was a shamuti? Because he was put in shamta. In Chayrim. Because he was put in Chayrim, they didn't follow his opinions. That's Rashi's answer. But Tosafot says, no, that's not true. Not true. That's what Tosafot says. Take a look in the underline here. Tosafot says, Shamta is not the word that they used when they excommunicated him. Tosafot says, Rabbeinu Tam v'Rashbam, the greatest of the Baalei Tosafot say, Shamuti huhainu dahava mitalmidei Shammai. He was a student of Shammai. Rebbe Lezer was a student of Shammai. And I ask you a question. Dear friends, who was Rebbe Lezer a student of? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He probably never met Shammai. Shammai probably, I don't know historically, you could probably figure it out. Shammai probably died long before he was born. So what does it mean that he was a student of Shammai? It means that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai learned, as we said, from Hillel and Shammai. So he learned two different traditions. He had a very broad perspective that incorporated multiple views, Beis Shammai's and Beis Hillel. He had two students. He had one student whose name was Rebbe Lezer ben Hyrcanus. And the Halakha Rebbe Lezer ben Hyrcanus, he must have tapped into, he must have appreciated and connected to the part of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's teaching that came from Shammai. Right, Shammai, it's interesting, and now I don't want to psychoanalyze and overgeneralize because I'm not so knowledgeable in this area. I'm kind of journeying about in the sea. But it's interesting that Shammai was extremely rigid. It was very austere, right? From the stories about the ger, the convert who came on one foot and Shammai pushes him away. Shammai was very much by the book. Rebbe Lezer says, I'm only going to teach you what my teachers taught me. I'm going to follow what it says in the Baskol. Yikov Adina Sahar, it's going to be the very strong Bashamayim. Whatever the heavenly justice is, that's what we're going to follow. And Rishua says, no. Rabbi Yeshua says that's one approach. But I don't come from the Shoresh of the Masorah from Yochanan ben Zakkai, from the Tzad of Shammai. I come from the Tzad of Hillel. So how did Hillel become Hillel? So the Gemara in Pesachim tells the story on page 9. The two great leaders, the B'nai B'Seira, who were the great rabbinic authorities in Israel, didn't remember what to do when Erev Pesach fell on Shabbos. So the Gemara says in Pesachim Samach Vav Med Aleph, Amr Lahem, somebody went into the B'nai B'Seira, these great scholars, and told them, says, you know, there's a guy, Adam Echad Yesh, Sha'ola Mibavel, V'Hillel HaBavli Shmo. There's a guy, he's been hanging around the Beis Medrash. You should talk to him, B'nai B'Seira. His name is Hillel. Sheshimish Negedoli Hador Shmai Vav Talyon. Maybe he knows whether Pesach is Docha Shabbos when the 14th of Nisan falls out on a Shabbos. Go ask him. And they did. Sholchu v'karulo, third line after the underline. Amrulo, they said to him, Klumata yodem, a Pesach dochas a Shabbos imlav. Do you happen to know? They said to Hillel, who at that time was probably not Hillel Hazakin, the great giant Torah leader. He's probably Hillel, the guy who just says, Ha'olami bubble, the guy who was hanging around the Beis Medrash. So he says to them, Amrulo, Klumata yodea, Omar lahem, v'chi Pesach echad yesh lanu b'shana shedocha es ha-Shabbos? V'halo harbe yosur mimasayim psachem yesh lanu b'shana shedocha es ha-Shabbos. It's not just that there's one Korban Pesach that's docha Shabbos. There are tons. What do you mean there are tons of Korbanos that are docha Shabbos? He says, I'll tell you. Omar lahem ne'mar mo'ado b'Pesach v'ne'mar mo'ado b'tamid. It says Moado in the Korban Pesach, and it says Moado in the Korban Tumid. Can I ask you, do you bring a Korban Tumid on Shabbos? Daily offering includes Shabbos. How can you bring a Korban on Shabbos? How's the Korban Docha Shabbos? The answer is, there are certain sacrifices that are time-bound, communal offerings that are going to be brought every day. The Korban Tumid is brought every day, Sunday through Shabbos, every day. And it says, because the word b'moado, in its time. So it says moado in Shabbos, and it says it in Pesach. Just like on Shabbos you bring the Tumid, so too on Pesach. And then he says it's also a kal v'chomer. Va'od kal v'chomeru, etc. What did Hillel tell them? Hillel did not tell them, oh, I have a Kabbalah from Shmai and Avtalion. I heard from my rabbis. What did he tell them? He says, I'll make a drasha. The word Moado over here means this. The word Moado means that. I don't think he invented the two thumbs move, but I can envision. You know, Shammai, Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanes didn't use his thumbs too much. But Hillel says, you know, it says like this, and it says like that, and I can make a Kal V'chomer and a Limud. Hillel was well known for making drushes, for a creative learning process. And this instantly catapulted Hillel to becoming the great teacher of the generation. B'nai B'Seira said, you're right, you know, we hand in our resignation, you really should be the Nasi, we're gonna leave right now. And the Gemara then tells a story about humility. It's a beautiful Gemara. But you see that for Hillel, it was the world not of Kabbalah, but the world of Drasha.
That's Rabbi Yeshua.
And so who's going to be the Talmud of Hillel? It's going to be Rabbi Yeshua. Now here's a suggestion, you could totally take it or leave it. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai looked at his kinderlach, his students, he said, Rabbi Lezer, he's a great student. He's my first on the list. He's like a Bor Sid, he doesn't lose a drop. Everything I say in the shir, he remembers it, and he's going to tell it for future generations. He says to Rabbi Yeshua, Ashrei Yoladato, praiseworthy is the one who gave birth to him. What an odd thing. I mean, I'm sure his mom was very happy to hear that. You know? What kind of a... But what is the idea of, and this is Al-Pidrush, you can take it or leave it. What does Rabbi Lezer say? What is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saying? He says, I see this student. I see this kid. What did his mother do to get him here? She birthed him. There was a creative process that brought this child into the world. That's what he's all about. He's about birthing new ideas, about creating, about nurturing and comparing and contrasting. It's not about what he collects and what he remembers. It's about what he creates. So he's like his mother. His mother created him in this world, and he creates a whole world of learning. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I saw that by my own Rebbe, by Hillel. That's what Hillel was all about. It was about the creative limud. And you're going to see this through Shas. And we'll give one more example. Page 10. Mishnah we once mentioned in Yadayim. It was a tumultuous time when it's called Bo Bayom. The first Mishnah in this parak is parak Bo Bayom. Why is it called Bo Bayom? Because for a period of time, Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya stood his ground when it came to his innovative shittos, even though they opposed Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi. And Rabbi Yeshua did not back down just like he didn't back down to Rabbi Lezer. He stood strong in his shittos, even though they were creative and innovative. He stood by them, even if it meant disputing Rabbi Gamliel when Yom Kippur was. And at a certain point, Rabbi Gamliel was, according to the sages, too harsh. And he was too disrespectful to Rabbi Yeshua that they actually, the Gemara says in Brachos, they actually deposed Rabbi Gamliel from being the Nasi. He was fired. He was sent away. And that may be why, when the five stages are gathering in Bnei Brak, it's Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon. Who's in the middle? Who's in the middle of the table? Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah. Hare ani kiven shimim shana. So what's the tradition that he grew a white beard, the Gemara says in Brachos? He's in the middle of the table because he's the Nasi. For a brief period of time, he was put in charge because Rabbi Gamliel was deposed. So Rabbi Gamliel was not at the Seder with these rabbis because he was sent somewhere else. He was in Baitas Ben Zunin's Seder. So Bo Bayom is that day. What was that day? That was the day that Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah became the Nasi. And it changed everything radically in a lot of different ways, and lots of halachic discussions came about. So remember, at that table, this time, at this incredibly complex time in Jewish history, now you see, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua were living through the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the rebuilding of Torah outside of Yerushalayim. Their Seder in Bnei Brak is at Rabbi Akiva's table, because Rabbi Akiva can bring his Rabbeim together and tell them, my beloved Rebbes, what you saw with your eyes, no one should ever have to see. But I'm the next generation, and I see laughter. I see there's going to be a hope. So they all came to his table. Remember, he was the boy who came to learn by them, so to speak, as they say in Yiddish, Chob Gelent Badir. But they came to learn by him because he's the next generation. He represents hope. So they come to Bnei Brak to sit with Rabbi Akiva on the night of the Seder. This is like, you can make a lot of Pesach Shiurim out of this shiur. There's a lot of Pesach Torahs here. So they come, Rabbi Gamliel is deposed, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah is the Nasi, and now they have a lot of debates. There's a lot of creativity. So they have a Shaila, Bo Bayom, new Shailas, Arvis, Arevas Haraglaim was one, Arvis was another, that was part of the Machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, was Arvis, is the evening prayer, is that a Rishus, a Rechova? That sparked a big part of this question. So it's interesting, Rabbi Nachman Cohen discusses Arvis in the context of this historical background of the evening prayer, the prayer at night, the prayer when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the Machlokas, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Gamliel, how Rabbi Akiva could fit into this. It's amazing. So let's skip Arvis, let's skip Arevas Raglaim, let's skip all that to the Machlokas, the bottom about Ammon and Moab, these two lands. What's the Meister for them on Shemitah? So they have a back and forth, and it's interesting that the Mishnah records the back and forth. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah says one thing, Rabbi Yishmael says something else on the bottom of the page. These are the same sages, they're coming back. The same sage from the Pesach Seder, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah and Rabbi Tarfon, and they're all arguing a back and forth the same day that Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah is appointed Nasi. It's not like when you start to learn these Mishnayos and put it all together, you realize like this is real life happening at this time. They're really having conversations. So second column on the left side where the letter A is. Heishiv Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon gave his answer. Om Rabbi Yoshua. Hareini Kemeshiv al Devarav. I'm going to answer you. Rabbi Yeshua says, I'm going to dispute you. On what basis is Rabbi Yeshua going to dispute him? Not on the basis of a tradition that he received from his teachers, but rather
his logic,
his analysis, his lumdus, his drasha. He says, "Hareini kemeshiv al divrei Tarfon achi." I'm going to answer my brother Reb Tarfon. My brother Reb Tarfon, the same Reb Tarfon who's sitting with him at the Pesach Seder. He says, "We're having a halachic debate." But not on the same point. He says, "Mitzrayim my sacharish b'chol my bavel my siyash," and he goes through the whole thing. So Reb Elazar is not there. They have this discussion without him, and then they come to tell him. Reb Yossi ben Dormaskis comes next on the line and be eats Reb Elazar lelud. He comes to Reb Elazar and lud. Amar lo, machidish ha'elachem beis medrash hayom. I don't know if this was in Pekin or Yavne, but they came to lud to tell Reb Elazar, Hagadol, you know what's going on. He happened not to be there in the beis medrash today, but they're all the same chabura. And they tell him, "Amalo nimnu v'gamru amanu moav mesasrin meiser ani b'shvius." It's meiser ani, like Rabbi Yeshua, the logic of Rabbi Yeshua. Bacha Rabbi Elazar v'amar sod Hashem liyrei v'uvisa lohodiyam. The secret of God, the circle of God, is to his followers. Save odiyam v'amar. Skip to the next page. V'amar lahem. Listen to the language. Al Tochoshu leminyanchem. Don't pay attention. Don't be lachush, means to suspect. Don't worry. Don't pay attention to your minyan. What is a minyan? Meaning the count up. Because all the rabbis voted and they paskined like the majority, like Rabbi Yeshua, that it's Maaser Ani. Rabbi Elazar says, that doesn't matter. Mekubal Ani me Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai Sheshama me Rabbo V'rabo me rabo halacha l'moshe me Sinai sha'amon u'moav meister ani b'shvius. Says Reb Elazar, you don't need to sit around with your thumbs and make pilpulim and analysis and drushes. I heard it from my Rebbe and his Rebbe from his Rebbe all the way back to Moshe me Sinai. That's the halacha. So you see from this story that the two opposing views, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar, can oftentimes arrive at the same conclusion, but they get there in very different ways. So what do I understand as the upshot of this whole story? That it's true that even though Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua had the same Rebbe and the same student, they can view the world in different ways. They can analyze halacha in different ways. They can analyze hashkafa in different ways. They could sit at the same table, at least most of the time, until they have to have an amida l'minyan. They can have tremendous respect and love for each other, but they can have differences of opinion. You know, Rabbi Elazar, the bor sid she'eino ma'abei tipa, he's going to stick to his guns until the day of his death. That's the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. And that's an important masorah. That's an important perspective. But Rabbi Yeshua is going to have a different way of looking at it, and he's going to amar al raglav. He's going to stick to his guns. He's going to say, "I come from this tradition of Hillel." It doesn't mean that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua invented their own approaches. Who has the right to invent? No one has the right to invent. But Rabbi Yeshua says, "I've latched on to the idea that we found in Hillel HaZaken already, the Koach of Drush." And perhaps that's what we need to think about as we move along now, to think about what is our Masorah, to understand that there are others who have a different Masorah. You know, Reb Chaim has many grandchildren who view things very differently from each other. They both come from Volozhin, they both come from Brisk. And they'll have sometimes even the same students will learn from both in different ways. But it's okay to say that we're going to tap into a particular aspect of our Masorah. I'll close with one story. You know, one of the sharpest disputes over the last 150 years has been about Zionism. Reb Chaim HaLevi Soloveitchik himself was very opposed to working with Zionists, and his own grandson, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, was the honorary president of the Mizrahi. So in the art school biography of Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovitz, after the pronouncement there was going to be this forthcoming state of Israel, apparently Rav Shraga Feivel gave a talk in Muncie to a group of yeshiva boys about the great significance and the Yad Hashem of the creation of the state of Israel. And how remarkable, what an incredible chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that was. A short time later, Rav Shraga Feivel apparently came across the Satmar Rav, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, who was well known to be a staunch opponent, totally opponent. And apparently, this is described that the Satmar Rav was very upset with Rav Shraga Feivel, and he really laced into him with midrashim and chazals and everything under the sun. And Rav Shraga Feivel was quiet. And afterwards, his student said to him, he said, what do you have to say about that, all that? He said to his students quietly, he said, I could have answered him, medrash for medrash, maimer chazal for maimer chazal. There are mamorei chazal that the Satmar Rav is going to bring to marshal, to support, to buttress his view. Rav Shraga Feivel says, I also have mamorei chazal. I also have my tradition. I also have my rabbein. So that's what we're going to explore. There will be people out there, and they should support their Mesorah with Ma'amari Chazal, with the statements of their Rabbeim, and that's important. But we, who have very important Mesorahs and specific values that we need to celebrate, we need to explore those and understand where they come from and what they're all about, so that we can bequeath them to the next generation, so that we can teach them to our children, we can celebrate them together. Shkoyach. Thank you.